Good afternoon. You are tuned to KTOO, and this is Juno Afternoon for Friday, August 2nd. My name is Martha Moore. Coming up in the next hour, we'll talk with Tracy Spring about her upcoming concerts in Gustavus. Jim Fowler will be here to talk about his art opening at the Rookery. Dick Callahan will be here to highlight his new book, Gear List of the Golden Moon. We'll learn about next week's Juno Jumper Summer Camp, and we'll get a preview of this week's Food Truck Friday. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. The forecast today is calling for clear skies tonight, lows around 51, and tomorrow sunny, highs around 67.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Drug and alcohol prevention was the focus this week at an annual conference held at the Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College in Minnesota. As J.P. Rehnquist reports, participants looked at the many faces of addiction.
The Minnesota American Indian Institute on Alcohol and Drug Studies, or MAIDS, reaches professionals throughout the region with information about the latest scientific research related to addiction and recovery. But there is also a strong emphasis on using traditional Native American teachings to help people of all backgrounds. Karina Forrest Perkins is director of Prevent Child Abuse Minnesota. In her keynote presentation earlier this week, she talked about how brain scans clearly demonstrate the danger of prolonged exposure to stress, verifying what Native elders have taught for centuries.
And so what we've always known in our gut forever, we now have the validation of science. And so we have maybe an opportunity to get our voice not just heard, but have our voice matter.
In addition to reaching mental health professionals, the MAIDS Conference also trains Native youth to serve as peer educators. The conference concludes later today, and many attendees will remain in northern Minnesota for this weekend's 35th annual Meshkawazin Sobriety Powwow, which also takes place on Fond du Lac Reservation. In Cloquet, Minnesota, I'm J.P. Rehnquist for National Native News.
Canoes have landed at the shore of a tribal community in the Pacific Northwest, and people have started a week-long celebration of culture and tradition. As KWSO's William Robbins reports, a group from the Warm Springs Reservation in Oregon is taking part in the annual event.
For the past few weeks, canoe families from around the Pacific Northwest have been steadily making their way from rivers, bays, and ocean waters that all lead to Washington's Quinault Indian Nation. Families from as far as Alaska and Canada and as near as Oregon and Washington are participating in this year's event. 4 years ago, the Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon returned to the Way of the Canoe as a means of cultural revitalization. Jefferson Green is one of the coordinators for the Itchiwanapum Canoe family. He says canoe journeys create opportunities for tribal members to relearn, strengthen, and reinforce tribal traditions.
This journey is about unifying nations from throughout the Pacific Northwest. So we are revitalizing this part of our culture and history.
Each participating tribe will share gifts of song and dance, offer prayers, and share meals. When it's over, each one involved will gain a greater cultural understanding of other tribes and life itself. I'm Will Robbins, reporting for National Native News.
Native youth taking their own lives in Northern California is concerning many people in the community. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, suicide is the second leading cause of death for Native Americans ages 10 to 34. As National Native News intern Polly Dinetclaw reports, two groups are working to do something about the problem.
In 2.5 years, 6 young Native Americans committed suicide in the Northern California area, according to the Sonoma County Indian Health Project, or SCIP. SCIP and the Family Service Agency of Marin are organizing the event, Gathering of Native Americans, or GONA. The gathering is aimed at suicide prevention of Native adolescents ages 12 to 17. Augustine Garcia, project coordinator for the Sonoma County Indian Health Project, says Native people need to recognize that suicide is a serious issue in Indian country.
To wake up and realize that, you know, we're losing our children. We really are. And all that we have done as Indigenous people was to protect and secure a future for our people. and now we're losing our young ones who are our future.
The event is focusing on providing youth a place to heal and to make strong connections with their peers. Instructors will provide information on how teens can help those who have suicidal thoughts and feelings. People in 5 counties with Native populations are invited to attend GONA. It's scheduled to take place August 30th through September 2nd in San Francisco, California. For National Native News, I'm Polly Dinetclaw.
During this week in 1816, Russian explorer Lieutenant Otto von Kotzebue reaches a sound in present-day Alaska. He gave the sound his name. Native people have long lived in the area they call Kikitagaruk, also known as the city of Kotzebue. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you are tuned to KTOO, and this is Juno Afternoon. Tracy Spring is on the line with me. She is a singer-songwriter based in Bellingham, Washington, and she's coming north to perform. Hi, Tracy.
Hi there.
Where are you headed?
Well, right now I'm in Gus Davis, which is the only place I'll be going this particular tour. I just came from Haines. I played at the Southeast Alaska State Fair. And I'm coming to Gus Davis to do 2 shows with some time in the backcountry in between. And it is beautiful weather, and I am stoked.
Yeah, it's great. I hope you brought your summer clothes.
Well, I brought my rain gear, which guarantees good weather, I think.
Yeah, I think so. So your concerts are Saturday, August 3rd. That would be tomorrow at 8 p.m.
Yep.
And that is where?
That is at Lou Cassiopo's beautiful, stunning new studio. It's an art gallery, but also a beautiful, great acoustics performance space. I'm only the 3rd music night he's had in it so far. It is brand spanking new, and I am stoked. It is stunning.
Excellent. And then you will also be performing next Friday, August 9th at 8, and where will that concert be?
That will be at the Gus Davis Public Library.
Okay, great. Have you been up here before?
I have. I believe my first trip was in 1962 or 63, which sort of dates me. Because I was not a toddler, but not much older than a toddler. My parents were Bob and Norma Spring, who specialized in writing and photographing Alaska for over 45 years. And that's the other piece of why I'm up here, and Gus Davis in particular, aside from playing music and interacting with the extensive music community here, I am going up Bay to spread some of my parents' ashes because they love this place.
Oh, that's so nice. So what will you be performing in these concerts?
Mostly music that I've written. I have been writing music since I was 12 years old and performing. I currently perform songs that aren't quite that old. Mm-hmm. it took me a while to get the craft, and I'm still learning. I also teach songwriting, incidentally, at least what I know about it. Folk is the easiest category, but I draw on influences from jazz and blues and swing and other great songwriters that I respect and admire, including your very own Buddy Tabor. I currently only perform one of his songs, but I expect to add more of his work to my repertoire because it's such great work and deserves to be carried on. I even got to meet him before he passed, which I'm very grateful for. Yeah, and I try and not write music that sounds like itself. So it helps me be very creative because now I've written a lot of songs, and if none of them are going to sound like themselves, then I've got to continue to get creative. And part of the way I do that is playing and writing and open tunings, which I've taught open tuning workshops at the Southeast Alaska Folk Fest as well. Playing open D, open G, drop D, and some weird ones. that nobody's ever heard of.
So what does that mean exactly, to play music that doesn't sound like itself?
Well, it means that you don't necessarily use the same chord progressions, and you certainly try and keep your lyrics fresh and not overuse phrases or concepts. Something that helped me is in the last few years in particular, I've started writing ballad type of songs, story songs, not necessarily the ballads that go on for 7 or 8 minutes in the old tradition with 20 verses, but concise storyline songs that are about interesting people or events. And there's a lot of those stories out. In fact, I am working on a concept album called Ballads or Tales of the Far North. That's the working title. And starting with a song that I performed first this year at the Folk Festival called The Hunter and the Bear, which is the northern version of the Sailor and the Silky concept, which, of course, is about love and the transformative properties of how people interact with each other. In the Silky tradition, sometimes she stays with the sailor and they live happily ever after. And she gives up her silky form and stays human. And sometimes she leaves him in the dust and he's heartbroken. So there's a lot of different outcomes to that. But I wrote the song called The Hunter and the Bear, which uses the bear and the hunter, with the bear shedding her thick hide, as it were, to become vulnerable. So that's the first song I wrote for that concept album. And I wrote another one as part of a musical. I got employed by the Iditarod School District this spring to work in part with 16 children from 4 different river villages that had written this magnificent musical based on the sighting of the first airplane in 1926. And what the social repercussions of having the outside world come into the villages. And they did a brilliant, absolutely brilliant job, led by a woman named Lydia Sorgan out of Anchorage. And they hadn't written the music yet, so I got to fly in and work with them for 3.5 days, and together we made the music. And one of those songs will be on this Ballads of the Far North, because it's appropriate to this concept.
What a wonderful experience. What village was it?
Well, I was flown into McGrath to do the work with those kids and work with children K through 12, broken up into 3 age groups, as is often the case. There's grades that are combined. And then the second, the superintendent in McGrath heard what I was doing with the kids and asked if I'd be willing to work a second week. So he flew me out to Holy Cross on the Yukon, which was heaven to me. Number one, I got to do bush flying, which I used to love as a kid and hadn't gotten to do much of. And number two, I got to cross country ski every night after work on the river and interact with these amazing, both non-native and native kids that were very receptive and open to self-expression and telling me about their world and listening to bits that I told them about my experience with the outside world. And it was just a fantastic experience that I would do again in a minute. I actually hope to do more of that work in underserved communities, more remote communities, with this woman, Lydia Sorgan, who put it all together. I just kind of flew in it.
Will this musical be performed somewhere?
It was performed in all 4 of the villages that the kids came from, and some of the kids from the schools in those communities that weren't involved with writing the play had bit parts. For example, the primary kindergartners made painted masks and participated in the graveyard scene as part of the spirit world. And the elders came, I guess what I heard, I had moved on to other commitments by that point in their tour, because I was still in the middle of mine. But I understand that the entire village turned out for this event that their children had written and were participating in.
That's great.
It was really great on so many levels.
Yeah. I've been speaking with Tracy Spring, and if you want to find out more about her and her music, you can visit her website, tracyspring.com. She'll be performing in Gustavus on 2 evenings. One is tomorrow evening at 8, And the other one is next Friday evening on August 9th at 8. And, she will be spending the week in between. And I suppose that she'll be accessible if anyone wants to go over there and take in those concerts.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to give me a ride up the bay, me and my borrowed kayak, call Lou Cassiopo, or the station. I'll give you my cell phone number too. And it'd be great to spend. I'd even play for my passage if somebody wanted me to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much for joining us, Tracy. And I wish you a great week in Gustavus and a couple of good concerts.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay.
Great bye-bye. To be here. Take care. Bye.
And this is one of Tracy Spring's songs from her CD, Life and Art, Into Someone's Eyes. And that's Tracy Spring from her CD, Life and Art. And this is KTOO, and you're listening to Juno Afternoon. I have in the studio with me Jim Fowler. Hi, Jim.
Hi there.
And Jim is here to talk about his upcoming show at the Rickery tonight for First Friday. And, I'm a great fan of your work. It's great to meet you and to talk about it for a little bit here. How many pieces will be on display at the Rookery?
There's 12 paintings, yes.
And how long did it take you to do 12 paintings?
It varies with some paintings come easy and some you have to work out a little bit longer. I do a lot of my work is done outside, but it's very seldom completed outside. So I usually have a drawer full of incomplete paintings that I can draw from, so I just I can pull the work together when it's necessary.
So when you say it's your work is done outside, then what typically is the subject?
I like natural landscapes. I'm interested in the texture. I'm interested. I just enjoy being outside, the whole experience. So,
It's a way to justify it?
It's a very good way to justify it.
So what's the process? I mean, do you take everything that you need to paint on the spot, or do you just, you know, bring the concept home?
They are probably 80% complete when I bring them home. And I've just, over a period of time, perfected a little kit that I take. And I work, some of the canvases are somewhat large, 30 by 40. I have the paint, and I have supports for the, it's unstretched canvas so I can roll it up. And I usually work in acrylic with a lot of heavy gel medium. And then I have things that I just throw together to create textures, and an umbrella if it's raining. I actually have used it more for sun this summer than for rain.
And so I have here that I'm looking at a postcard. It's sort of an advertisement of your show, and where is that place?
That is along the Haines Highway, and it's almost to Haines Junction, but that particular range is, and it's in the Kewaunee National Park.
That was my guess. I've seen that view many times.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what I really like about your artwork. It kind of brings back the feeling and the lighting and the expansiveness of the scenery up here.
Nature will just kind of throws at you far more than you could ever come up with on your own. And because the light changes and the colors and the seasons, and it's just it's just a part of the solution just to be out there.
Can you is there a label for the kind of style that this is?
It's pretty loose. I'm not sure I would call it impressionistic. But given the constraints of light and just your time and weather and whatever, it seems to push me anyway towards a little looser style. But I don't know if I would call it. I'm not sure exactly what I would call it.
You know, I guess what's interesting to me as I look at it is it looks like it's really, there's great detail in it, but then when you look really closely, it's a bunch of splotches and dots.
Yeah, my wife and I laugh because the comment I get a lot is the farther I get away from it, the better it looks. I like paintings that I see something new in them every time that I look at them. It's not the one aha, and then the painting doesn't change for me. But I'm kind of building these little passages in the painting as it's being created. Some intentionally, and some are just, I just stop with the accident that I like.
I'm not artistic myself, but I always envy people who are, because I feel like, you know, at the end you've not just created something beautiful, but is it sort of cathartic? Like I don't know.
I almost see it as being autobiographical, because it's where I am doing what I'm doing at the moment, and it's like anything, any activity, it's not all, everything doesn't go right all the time. So, but I always feel better after a day of painting, even if it doesn't go well.
Yeah, so it's kind of hard to talk about painting over the airwaves. I think the best way to appreciate your work would be to come out to the Rookery tonight. It's First Friday, and they'll be
from about 4:30 on.
About 4:30 on, yeah. And it'll be there all month as well, right?
Yeah, it will.
And are these pieces for sale?
Yes, they are.
Great. Mm-hmm. So, is this your full-time job?
I also illustrate children's books.
Uh-huh.
And I do a little bit of teaching, and so I just kind of blend a lot of things together.
But yeah. It's pretty much art.
The painting is what I love to do, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really great to have you here, and I assume that the Rookery will be open for business, and I think there's nothing better than sipping wine and enjoying artwork.
Cup of coffee.
Yes, which I've done many times on First Friday. So, yeah, please come out and see these the newest paintings here by Jim Fowler. And, yeah.
Thank you very much.
And you will be there and to talk about it and show people different things.
I'd be happy to chat about it.
Yeah. Okay, thanks so much for coming in, Jim.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good luck with your show. And you are tuned to KTOO, and this is Juno Afternoon. And I have in the studio with me Dick Callahan, who is here to talk about his book called Gear List of the Golden Moon. And he is going to have a book signing tonight for First Friday at Hearthside Books downtown. That's starting at 4:30. Hi, Dick.
Hi, Martha.
Glad to have you in the studio today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So what is the Golden Moon?
The Golden Moon is an 18-foot rowing dory, rowing/sailing dory.
And this dory and you became close for quite some time.
We did. I've had the boat for 3 years now, and last year I took her on a long trip to Seattle. But the book is mostly about the gear that is good to have along with you when you're out in the boat, whether you're on a long trip or just traveling on the coast or being out in the channel on a night like this one.
So on the back cover it says, if some things are in the way of your own open boat travels, like you've got no boat, no gear, no money, no experience with either distance rowing or sailing, and no clue where to start, this boat is for you. And when I read that, I figured this book was not for me, but I actually found the book quite entertaining.
Well, thank you.
And so how is it you know so much about this topic, and what made you want to write this book?
When I was making plans for getting the boat, I had to make a whole lot of decisions, and I was fortunate to live where I do. I was able to find people that had been out in small boats and make some connections with people, but not really with exactly the sort of boat that I had. There are 100 small decisions that you have to make that can make a big difference. For example, what type of oar locks do I want to have? Do I want round oar locks or horn oar locks? And you get into these forums on the internet, and people will have these long strings of conversations about things that you can't, or if you don't know, you're not sure if this is important or if this is just a couple of people talking to hear themselves talk. And so ultimately I had to make a lot of decisions and thought it would have been really nice to have it all in one place when I started, and whether I use this thing or that thing, at least I would have had a place to start. And for too many years, I didn't have a boat, and the big thing for me was actually getting the boat. Once I got it, it was things moved pretty quickly from there.
It's really a wealth of information in that book, and I think extremely valuable, and not just to people who might take a trip like that, but anybody who spends a lot of time in the outdoors, in the elements up here.
I love being out on the water. It's my favorite thing, and just the simple pleasure of being out in the channel early in the morning or late in the evening. There's so much going on out there right now. It's absolutely phenomenal.
So the style of the book is very much like you're having a conversation with the reader, and you have a wonderful dry sense of humor and sort of wax philosophical at times. Were you trying to capture a larger audience, or is that just your style of writing?
That would be my style of writing more.
it's very thoughtfully written, and it goes into great detail. I mean, to the extent of how to urinate while you're in your boat and you're moving in the water.
It's a nice thing to have an open boat. If you're doing a 10-mile open water crossing and you have a kayak, it's more problematic.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. The book can get technical in places, but there's just so many common sense observations and advice, that can be applied to life in general. And I want to ask you to read something, if you might. Is that okay?
Sure.
It's on this page, and it's just this paragraph in the middle. It's called Perspective, Stay in the Boat.
Okay. Ocean masters have a maxim, never let the ship get moving faster than you can think. That's why I have a rowboat. Thinking's a slow, centered process. At any speed over 3 knots, we leave the center and get out ahead somewhere. So speed for thinking is an obstacle like rocks or deadheads. destinations are even worse. You can't be where you are if you're mentally already arrived at the end and you're just waiting for yourself at the finish line. I tell myself to stay in the boat often, both physically and mentally. When people asked where I was going, I'd name the next town. If they asked where then, I'd tell them, I don't really have a destination because it would keep me from being where I am. Everybody understood. Which surprised me, actually. You know, I thought, well, that's kind of an esoteric thing to say, but all along the route, people would go, oh, yeah, I get that, right away.
Well, it's kind of a great piece of advice for anybody, whatever they're doing.
I think so, but it's hard to be in that place, and that's why being in a small boat
very hard to be in that place
is a wonderful thing, because you and anything that happens in a on the water is an immediate thing. If it's something that is hazardous, you address it right then, and so there's not a lot of fear involved because you take care of whatever it is, and then you're off down the way. And so you, it's not like the kind of the things that we usually become apprehensive about or things that we hear about on the media that make us nervous. It's more like, yeah, we're out and we can do something about this. And it's a satisfying way to spend time.
And you're focused on it.
Yeah.
You're not distracted.
Right.
Yeah. I've been talking to Dick Callahan about his boat Gear List of the Golden Moon, and he will be at Hearthside Books downtown for book signings, and that starts at 4:30, and then he'll again be signing books next Tuesday at the same venue from 12 to 2 in the afternoon.
Right.
And it's a great read. I think anybody would enjoy it. Actually, by the time I was done, I actually thought about I could maybe do this someday. I'm not by myself, but...
Oh, just you can definitely be out in the channel.
Yeah, you could be out in the channel. And so, a lot of good information and just fun to read. Thanks so much, Dick.
Thank you, Martha.
Okay.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 2nd of August, 2013. Today is the anniversary of the official signing of the Declaration of Independence in 1776. It was introduced as a resolution by Richard Henry Lee, a delegate from Virginia, on June 7th of that year, the resolution reading that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states. 24 original copies of the Declaration of Independence are known to exist. 2 are kept in the Library of Congress, one of them Washington's personal copy. It's the birthday of writer James Baldwin, born in Harlem Hospital in New York in 1924, oldest of a family of 9 children, spent much of his childhood with a baby in one hand and a book in the other, taking care of his siblings. And he read and reread Uncle Tom's Cabin and A Tale of Two Cities. Baldwin was accepted into a prestigious, mostly white high school, and while he was encouraged by the intellectual atmosphere of the school, he realized he would never have the same opportunities as his classmates. After graduation, Baldwin took a job working on a construction project for the Army. He experienced racism on the job, was fired several times for insubordination. He decided that his only chance at a better life would be to leave his family and become a writer. He moved to Greenwich Village, supported himself as a dishwasher, had some success with book reviews, but finally he used the money that he had to buy a ticket to Paris. He arrived there with $50 in his pocket. A few days after he arrived, he was locked out of his hotel room for lack of payment. He sold his clothes and his typewriter to survive, and then was falsely arrested for stealing a bedsheet and thrown into a French prison. Baldwin said at the time, "It seemed to me that my flight from home was the cruelest trick I had ever played on myself, since it had led me here, down to a lower point than any I could ever in my life have imagined. Lower far than anything I had seen in that Harlem which I had so hated and so loved." After he got out of prison, Baldwin had almost given up on the novel he'd been writing for years, but a friend set him up in a cottage in the French countryside. Writing in almost total isolation, Baldwin was able to finish the novel in a few months. It came out in 1953 as Go Tell It on the Mountain, a big success. Baldwin went on to become one of the most renowned writers of his generation. And here's a poem by Robin Robertson entitled Siesta After Montale. You lie through midday in the shade of a sun-baked garden wall, pale, absorbed by the crackle of blackbirds, the rustle of snakes in the dry sticks and thorns. You try to decipher the red lines of ants that scrawl through the climbing plants, down through the ruts of the scorched ground, to break and braid and break again over the tops of their little mounds. You might see, through the leaves, the distant pulse of the sea, the distinct green scales of the waves, while the churning of cicadas rises, chiding and fricative, up from the empty heights. And then you will walk, sun-blinded, into the slow and bitter understanding that all this life and all its heartsick wonder is just the following of a wall ridged with bright shards of broken glass. Siesta, a poem by Robin Robertson from his collection Swithering, published by Harcourt, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. This is Billy Collins, hoping you will join us here next time on the Writer's Almanac.
And you are tuned to KTOO, and this is Juno Afternoon. I'm Martha Moore, your host today. And I have in the studio with me Claire Varner and Chloe Varner. Hi.
Hi. Hi.
So glad you could come. They're here to talk about Juno Jumper Summer Camp. And let's just start out and tell us the particulars about the camp this summer.
So it's for ages 6 and up, and it's... through the 5th to the 9th, and it starts at 8 a.m. and ends at 12, and there's only 40 spots available, so make sure that you sign up fast, and it's $125, but that includes a t-shirt, your very own jump rope, and you get a snack, so, plus you get to learn some awesome moves.
And how do you sign up?
So you can contact our coach at her cell phone number, which is 321-8987, or you can go to our website at junojumpers.org.
Okay, great. So what do you like best about Juno Jumpers? I think you are two real Juno Jumpers here,
yes,
right?
Yes, I am.
What do you like about it?
I just like that it's like a family. So every day that we go to practice, we get to see some of our best friends, and we get to have fun and jump rope and exercise and learn new tricks, and it's just a positive thing.
So what does it take to be a Juno jumper? Do you have to be athletic or acrobatic?
You have to be athletic. That's like the number one thing. A lot of people don't know, but it's very hard to jump rope, and it takes a lot out of you.
It's exhausting, I think.
Yes.
And who are the coaches?
So they're Tara and Karen Ross, and they're volunteer coaches, and they are awesome.
Now, is Juno Jumpers, is that connected with the school, or is that a separate thing?
It is totally separate from the schools. It's a nonprofit organization.
Great.
So, yeah.
So, I know that sometimes there are competitions and that our Juno jumpers have gone to. Mm-hmm. How have they done?
We've done so wonderful this year. This past June, we went to Nationals in Long Beach, California, and a lot of our jumpers medaled. And then last week, two of our jumpers went to Detroit and competed in the Junior Olympics, and they got third place.
So it's an Olympic sport?
Yes, wow. Junior Olympics, so against the whole world.
And they got third?
Yes, mm-hmm. Out of Juneau, Alaska, they got third.
We have an amazing community,
yes.
Don't we? We always have winners here. So how do you pay for that travel then when you get to go somewhere?
So things like this, our camp, the money we get for that is going to help pay for traveling and getting new equipment. Also, we do different fundraising things, but mostly from our community and corporate sponsors.
So once someone has gone to the camp for, 4 days, 5 days?
Mm-hmm.
And they decide they want to stick with it, mm-hmm. Then what the kind of commitment do they need to make?
Mm-hmm. So depending on the age of the person, we have different programs throughout the school that they can go through there and then get better at jump roping, and then eventually when they're older come back.
Mm-hmm. And about how many jumpers are in the group, typically?
Probably around 20.
20? Mm-hmm.
Right now.
And mm-hmm. So if you have 40 spots open, are these 40 new people, or are they old people?
Well,
old
depending,
jumpers?
Sometimes. It really can be anyone. If you want to jump rope, if you want to have fun during this camp, just come along. But we're always open to new jumpers and new input.
So I'm wondering, after high school, is there a future in jumping rope?
Well, I'm in high school at the moment, mm-hmm. and I do not know, but I do know there's a girl named Tori Boggs that comes to Juneau a lot, and she is in college, and she actually travels the world teaching people how to jump rope. So.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go on
yes.
and jump. What do you think you get out of Juneau jumpers besides just real good physical conditioning? Anything else?
Well, you do meet a lot of new people. You get some really good friends.
You get to show the community everything that you can do. We travel southeast a lot. We just went to Haines and did a small little show. It's a lot of fun, and I think it's good character building.
So does Haines have a Juneau? do they have their own jumper group?
No, they invite us every year to have a little show.
So is that really special to have a have a jumper group?
Yes.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
not every community has one.
No, that's why it's so big that Juneau got third place in the Junior Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And how many Alaskan, do you know how many?
Well, there is a team in Sitka called the Sitka Skippers, and I do not know how many's on their team, but they're really good as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. It sounds really fun. I wish they had thought of that when I was younger. I think I would have been good. So I'm here with Claire and Chloe Barner, and they are Juneau jumpers, and they've been telling us about summer camp, which, again, let me repeat, it's for ages 6 and up. It's from August 5th through 9th, and it's at 8 in the morning to 12 noon. There are 40 spots open, and it costs $125.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much for coming in. And, yeah, I hope. Are you going to go to camp, the
yes.
two of you?
Yes, we'll okay. be there helping out all that
right.
we can.
Because you're all old veterans. You,
yeah.
you know the ropes, so to speak. So, anyway, a lot of fun and great physical conditioning,
mm-hmm. yes.
I'm sure. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And you are tuned to KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon, and in the studio I have four people in front of me: Catherine Wilkins, Lemomi Martin, Jeremy Rosales, and Guy Unsicker. And they are all here to talk about Food Truck Friday tonight. They are the performing portion of Food Truck Friday. Food Truck Friday is something that happens every Friday night during the summer, and they have food, and they have crafts, and they have music. So first I'd like to talk with Catherine, and she is in the cello choir, the Juno Cello Choir. Tell me about the Juno Cello Choir.
Well, it's a group that I founded about a year ago. Our first performance was last summer at a concert in the park, and now we're very happy that it's been moved over to the Juno Arts and Culture Center because it's easier on cellos to be playing indoors, of course. So that's, our group.
Cello is one of my favorite instruments.
Me too.
I bet. It's such a beautiful sound. I didn't know we had a cello choir. How long have you been around?
About a year. It's kind of just a modest little group. We played, as I said, last summer, a concert in the park, and then we performed at the Pioneers Home a couple of times in the fall, and we did a Christmas concert, or Christmas carol concert at the Juno Public Market. And then I organized a cello quintet that played at Symphony Showcase in the spring, and then we've been a little dormant, so now we're getting back into our active mode. We'll be a quintet tonight. We had hoped to be a sextet, but one of our members got stuck in Seattle. So the group kind of fluctuates in size. We've had bigger and we've had, well, we haven't, this is probably the smallest we've ever been.
So what will you be performing tonight?
We're going to be doing a work by Mozart, two by Schubert, and one by Offenbach. And then one of our members, James Chang, is going to do a solo, two bourrées by Bach.
Great. Mm-hmm. Are some of you members in the symphony as well?
Yeah, I played with the symphony, and Megan Johnson, who's the first cellist in the symphony, is also in the group. And then we have David Russell Jensen, and who's the principal cellist at the Student Symphony, James Chang, and who was recently in the Juno Empire. There's a photo of him busking. And Jenna Gunther, who joined us last year and is going to be going into Student Symphony this fall.
Great. And Lemomi Martin, you are representing the Hawaiian Hula Group. I didn't know till recently we had a hula group. How long have we had a hula group?
Aloha Friday. I am the founder of what's called the Halau Hula, or Ili Ili Ula, meaning the School of Northern Lights, something that's dedicated for Alaska. We started this back in 2008. It's a nonprofit organization, and it's geared towards mostly toward education. I deal with the educational school systems in terms of teaching hula, the Hawaiian language, and I also teach both modern and ancient hula.
Ah, and you are from Hawaii?
Half Hawaiian, half Alaskan, half Japanese.
Ah, did you grow up in Hawaii?
Yes, I did.
Ah. Well, that's... thank you for bringing hula to Juno because, it just makes that our community, what's offered here, so much fuller. What will you be performing tonight?
Tonight is going to be both modern and both ancient hula. And the kahiko, meaning ancient, will do three. And this is under Kalakaua and Queen Liliʻu Kalani. And the second part, which is the awana, the modern, would be more of a, it's a modern hula that you find and see in the luaus.
Great. Are you always open for new members?
Always. Okay. And they're always welcome to come and to attend. And we're located upstairs at the Filipino Community Hall.
Okay, great.
On Wednesday night.
So that's the Hawaiian Hula Group. And then Slush Not Snow is the band that JR and Guy Unsicker represent. And tell us about that band.
We're a rock band. We started in September 2011. Mm-hmm. We've played shows around town the past 2 years, probably once a month. And we are great friends and enjoy what we do.
That helps. And so you would categorize it as rock?
We're a rock band. We're influenced by a lot of different kind of music. You know, indie rock music, punk music, folk music even, 80s music,
and
dance music,
and what
all of it.
Instruments do you play?
I play guitar and sing.
And I play bass and sing. And okay. We have another member named Eric who plays drums and also sings.
Great. So what will you be singing tonight?
We're going to be playing 4 original songs that we wrote and 1 cover song.
Great. What's the cover song?
It is a song called Someday by the rock band called The Strokes. They're one of our bigger influences.
Definitely.
So. Do you play around town, other venues?
Yeah, we played a lot out at the UAS Recreation Center. We've played at the Jack a number of times. Yeah, just all the events. Yeah, we just got back from the Haynes Fair, and that was really fun. Got to play a lot.
Okay, thanks so much, all of you, for coming in. And let me encourage people to go to Food Night Friday. I believe it starts about 5:30, and the music, do you know when the performing?
5:30, I believe.
About 5:30.
I think it's first Friday, so the gallery will be open for, you know, people who want to go to the Arts and Culture.
Probably you could go right now.
I think at 4:30 is when that starts,
okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Music at 5:30.
So, I wish you all good performances tonight.
And thank you very much.
Thank
for
you.
Having
thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's it today for today's Juno Afternoon. Thanks for joining me, and thanks to all the guests today. To listen to any of today's interviews or any other Juno Afternoon programs, visit the KTOO.org website under Local Programs and Juno Afternoon. Please join us tomorrow at 3. Lori Scandling will be host. We'll learn about the upcoming production of Seussical with guests Cinnamon Simpson and William Todd Hunt. Jessalyn Rintala will be there with an update on Juno Jazz and Classics, and we'll get the details about Wednesday's encore performance of Pippin with guest Robert Newman. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more. Monday at 3 on a Juno Afternoon. And the weather is looking still clear. Tomorrow sunny, highs around 67, and increasing clouds tomorrow night, chance of rain late, lows around 53. Coming up next, All Things Considered.
Economy might be getting better for some, but it's not getting better for me.
The jobless rate falls to 7.4%, but that number still falls short of economists' expectations.
And average hourly wages fall short of workers' hopes.
It's Friday, August 2nd, and this is All Things Considered. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Melissa Block. Coming up, our weekly political commentators on a key economic policy position at the next Federal Reserve Chair.
Later, Detroit's bad brand. Even before its bankruptcy, the city had image trouble.
Just like the causes for Detroit's current situation, the feelings about Detroit, I think, are complicated.
In Minnesota, a wedding marathon led by the Minneapolis mayor after the state legalizes gay marriage.
I didn't quite realize how much work that would be for my staff around me, but it was also an incredible labor of love.
And a boycott of Russian vodka in West Hollywood. Now the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear.
The latest unemployment report shows the economy still adding jobs, but at a slow pace, 162,000 last month. NPR's Ari Shapiro reports the unemployment rate dropped to 7.4%, partly because people are leaving the workforce.
Republicans argue that the shrinking workforce is a worrisome sign that people are giving up hope of finding a job. But Alan Krueger, who chairs President Obama's Council of Economic Advisors, says part of this shift is built into American demographics.
And actually, this is something that the Bush administration predicted back in the mid-2000s, that we would be seeing declining labor force because of an aging workforce.
This was Krueger's last day on the job. Taking the long view, he predicts that the country will get back to where it needs to be, but says it's taking longer than it should. Asked to name a major insight that he's gained from his tenure at the White House, Krueger replied, "Congress is awfully difficult to work with." Ari Shapiro, NPR News, the White House.
Americans who are traveling overseas are being advised to take extra precautions. The State Department announced last night it will shut down 21 embassies and consulates this weekend in the Muslim world. And citing an apparent threat from Al-Qaeda, the government is also issuing a global travel alert, pointing to possible threats to public transportation systems or other easy targets. Seth Jones is with RAND Corporation's International Security and Defense Policy Center and says there's no firm information on the exact location of the threat.
It's unclear whether that's in Yemen or somewhere else, but a lot of blinking red intelligence that appears to be pointing to an Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula plot.
Officials are calling on Americans heading abroad to register with consular authorities in the countries they're visiting. Britain announced it's closing its embassy in Yemen and has advised its citizens to leave that country. Time Warner Cable has removed CBS networks in New York, Dallas, and Los Angeles. As NPR's Dan Bobkoff explains, it's the latest fallout from heated and protracted contract negotiations.
Time Warner customers tuning to CBS in New York will instead find a message from the cable company. The two sides have been negotiating for months and are at an impasse over how much Time Warner should pay CBS to carry its channels. Time Warner has painted CBS's price as unreasonable. CBS says it has the most popular programming and is being underpaid compared with other channels. The Time Warner blackout also applies to CBS-owned properties like Showtime, TMC, and Flix. In dueling statements, Time Warner says CBS has refused to have a productive discussion. CBS says Time Warner has conducted negotiations in a combative and non-productive spirit. Dan Bobkoff, NPR News, New York.
Commerce Department says June factory orders rose 1.5% compared to the previous month. Strong demand for airplanes, machinery, and automobiles, pushing total factory orders to $496.7 billion. An up end of the week on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 30 points to close at 15,658. The NASDAQ rose 13 points. You're listening to NPR. The Cleveland man sentenced to life plus 1,000 years in prison for holding three women inside his home and raping them repeatedly. He began serving his sentence isolated from other inmates. According to a spokesman for the Ohio Prison Department, Ariel Castro, when he enters the state prison system, at least initially, will not go into the general population because of the high-profile nature of his case. Castro remained in the Cleveland jail cell today after being sentenced yesterday. He reached a deal with prosecutors sparing him the death penalty on charges he abused one of the women who was pregnant until she miscarried. Talk show host Ellen DeGeneres has been tapped to host next year's Academy Awards. As NPR's Mandalika Barker reports, she previously emceed the ceremony in 2007.
Comedian Ellen DeGeneres says she's thrilled to be hosting the Oscars for the second time.
You know what they say, third time's a charm.
During her opening monologue in 2007, DeGeneres warmly chided the live audience of nervous nominees, and she joked about her own good fortune.
I think most people dream of winning an Academy Award. I had a dream of actually hosting the Academy Awards, and so let that be a lesson to you kids out there. Aim lower.
In her stand-up routines and her Emmy-winning daytime talk show, DeGeneres has always delivered this kind of low-key, self-deprecating humor. She's a far cry from last year's Oscars host Seth MacFarlane, whose sarcastic and some said sexist jokes turned off many viewers. Mandalit Del Barco, NPR News.
The board of computer maker Dell says it's agreed to accept an increased offer for the company from founder Michael Dell. Dell and his group of investors looking to take the company private and sweetening his $24.6 billion offer by adding 13 cents a share to the offer made last week for the company. I'm Jack Spear, NPR News in Washington.